Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Born Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how the devil are you doing?
I'm good. I feel hot, and I'm never going to cool down. The problem, we use a camera setup here in Donaldson Towers to do our podcasts, and I did a podcast before this one. I'm not doing a podcast afterwards, but this one, my camera has decided to overheat. That's how hot it is in Hertfordshire at the moment.
Wow.
It's steamy. It's a steamy one, Chris.
And worst of all, you can see me on the camera, but I can't see you. So it's kind of like,
I feel like I've got to be careful what I do.
Peeping Tom Dawson.
Careful what you do, peeping Tom.
You could be watching me. Scary.
I am watching you. I'm completely Billy Bollocks. I can be absolutely naked.
Oh, dear God. And it wouldn't be the first time, would it, Pete? I remember we recorded in Donaldson Towers once, and you did like not have a shirt on at one point, and it was thoroughly unpleasant.
Yeah.
It was difficult to
very
record.
Very hot though, wasn't it?
Atmosphere.
It was hot. It was very hot.
That's
distracting.
That's no excuse.
It's hard to record when you're aroused, isn't it, Chris? I completely agree.
Oh, God. Well, another episode of Journey Across Japan is about to come out. And in this episode, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we went to the biggest volcano in all of Japan, and then we made a rap song. And I suppose at the time of this podcast coming out, that episode should be out, because we're recording this a few days beforehand. But the challenge in episode two, right? Typical Journey Across Japan challenge. We had to make a rap song about our day. And credit where it's due to Natsuki and Joey, they knocked it out the park. We made a rap song called Too Much Volcano. as you can probably tell, Natsuki came up with the title and the chorus. But it's going to be good. You're in for a real treat, Pete. And everyone listening. So it's going to be
very
like nothing you've ever seen. Just finished
with good producing. Cause.
Yeah, well, I've just finished producing the song today, and yeah, I feel a bit out of my depth. I can edit a video, but I can't make a song. So go easy on me when it does come out. But it was cool. We went to in the episode. We went to Aso Farm Village. I don't know if you remember seeing this back in 2018, the first Journey Across Japan season. But we went to Kumamoto, and they've got these little domed huts. They're kind of like igloos. It's kind of like Smurfland meets Fred Flintstone's Bedrock. And basically, they're like little polystyrene domes, but they're earthquake-proof. And when there was a big earthquake in Kumamoto, I think 2016 or 17, they were completely unharmed, and they became like a shelter for people in Kumamoto to go in and be safe because they don't fall down. But I've been there twice now. Whenever I go, it's just empty. This massive village with 500 domes, and we are the only ones staying there in this video. It's so creepy, but it's
earthquake proof.
I guess I can see why it's earthquake. If there was an earthquake proof, we'd have the last laugh in Kumamoto. Yeah. Crikey. But should be a good episode. Keep an eye out. And
yeah,
should be good. We've got a story this week, and it kind of ties in with a story we had a few weeks ago. It must have been a month ago now. Do you remember, Pete? There was a British national who did something unspeakable in the wonderful ancient town of Kamakura, just outside of Tokyo. He stuffed a bento box into a mailbox and contaminated lots of envelopes and letters. Do you remember this?
I do, but that's not the full story, is it, Chris? He did it every day, forever. He just kept putting his rubbish in a postbox, like an absolute tore rag, an absolute sociopath.
It's right, he did. It wasn't like a simple mistake. He did it more than once. Nobody knows why he did it. Maybe he, I don't know. Why do you think he did it, Pete? What are your theories?
Well, there was some theories that that the guy was he wasn't a Brit, he was a foreigner, wasn't he? And people
he's a British
that
dude.
You might think that they're
half Japanese, I think. Anthony Tanaka,
right? Well, he sort of thought that the bin was not the bin, or rather, the post box was the bin. But people are sort of saying that's a really weird thing to sort of think, especially if you've lived with in Japan for a little while.
Well, Japanese post box is bright red, pretty easy to know it's a post box, but regardless, he's got off the hook. Prosecutors have announced the non-prosecution of a British national, Anthony Tanaka, aged, doesn't say, he allegedly stuffed empty bentos with chopsticks and plastic bottles into a street mailbox in front of the city's government office, just to add insult to injury. Upon his arrest, he violated the Waste Management and Public Cleansing Act, age 37. He denied the allegations, saying, "I thought it was a garbage can." But whatever the case, the Yokohama District Public Prosecutor's Office denounced he was getting off scot-free, no reason for any prosecution, got away with it. Apparently, 150 pieces of mail had been soiled in 7 incidents. Of those incidents, 3 took place at that mailbox in front of the city office. An officer on patrol apprehended Tanaka after seeing him insert the bento box into the slot. And then they investigated him for a few weeks after that to see it was him. Weird story. Not really sure how I feel about it. I don't know. It's just a shame.
Why was the bento box so full of food that it would contaminate the rest of the post? Why can't he eat all of his bento box? Consider a smaller bento box, sir.
To be fair, I got done when I was a teacher. I used to get the school lunchbox every day, and I didn't eat the rice. And I thought it was all right. I was like, just leave some of the rice.
It's rice, isn't it?
After about a month, the one of the staff like apprehended me. They were like, "Wait a minute, you're the one that's been leaving the rice behind." I was like, I don't.
It's rice.
I'm British.
It's fine. Goddamn rice.
It's British culture to leave the rice. thus, I can sympathise with Anthony Tanaka. We are the same. 150 pieces of mail destroyed. It's pretty harsh. I suppose that's the real issue here, isn't it? Just hope it hasn't soiled the reputation of British nationals in the same way the bento soiled the street mailbox. Shocking behaviour. In other news, a Japanese cook shaved off their head in apology after a gross customer complaint. In Japan, one of the most earnest old school ways to apologise is by shaving your head. I remember a member of AKB48, I think 5 or 6 years ago, she got caught kissing a guy. And as you probably know, idol girls here can't have relationships with guys or any relationship lest it kind of destroy the imagination of the fan base of the idol group. It's all a bit weird. But anyway, she dated someone, saw someone, got caught, got in a lot of trouble, and she shaved off her hair and made a crying apology video. So shaving off your hair is like a big kind of deal in Japan. It's actually seen as a means of apology. Is that why you shave off your hair, Pete, on occasion?
If a few more vloggers on YouTube apologise for being little shits on YouTube, if they could shave their heads a bit more, I'd be on board. But yeah, it's a horrible life, isn't it, being in an idol group? It's very regimented.
It is. But that's a story for another day. So this chef, basically, a takoyaki stand in Osaka, received a customer complaint about a heinous transgression. He grabbed the clippers and got clipping, but the case was apparently a customer complained that they'd found a hair in their takoyaki. Oh God, that's pretty awful. What's more, since the customer didn't notice the hair in their takeout takoyaki until they got home, the takoyaki stand owner even made a special point of going to her home to apologize in person over the hair. After arriving at the customer's house, the takoyaki stand owner says he asked the woman to show him the takoyaki she'd found the hair in. When she did, they were able to determine that she hadn't actually bought the takoyaki from that stand at all, but from another from another stand entirely.
Okay, so this story is a man An owner of a takoyaki stand is accused of leaving a hair in the takoyaki. A woman explains that there's a hair been found in the takoyaki. The restaurant owner shaves his head to apologize, which would only increase the level of hair in the air, presumably, wouldn't it? Like, it would get in the takoyaki if you shaved your hair in the restaurant. But yeah, so it's to reduce the likelihood of hair being found in the takoyaki in the future, he shaved his head, went round the annoying customers one-star TripAdvisor person's house. Turns out that it was a different takoyaki stand, and the guy didn't need to shave his head at all because his takoyaki was hairless. Oh dear, never mind.
I think the customer should shave their hair in apology for this terrible,
completely agree,
self-harm. It's awful, isn't it? I hate that. But I've had a few times I've had hair. When I first moved to Sendai, right, there's where I lived at the time, there was no restaurants nearby, which is a terrible fate for someone like me who can't cook, right? It was either starve to death, get something from 7-Eleven every day, which I ended up doing, or go to the nearby ramen shop. There was a lovely ramen shop. It had good reviews. I went in. Must have been living in Sendai for a week, and I sat down, ordered the oily ramen. It's kind of like an oily broth. And I put my spoon in to have a nice sip and pull out the noodles. And there was a big black hair in the soup. And I never went there again. And I don't remember how I got out of the situation, because obviously it's kind of rude not to eat food in Japan, especially at a restaurant. I don't know what I did. I must have, like, horrifyingly, I think I must have eaten some of the ramen and then sort of just slowly paid and walked out. Either way, I never went back. But, like, that'd be really awkward to be like, oh, Sumasen, your fucking hair's in the ramen. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? Cut your hair off. Do it now. it's ridiculous, but, like, horrible situation.
It's just a hair. Get it down, you, for crying out loud. Oh.
Have you ever had hair in your food? Have you had that happen?
Well, look, if anyone's got any hair in food or weird thing or insect or weird thing in food, let us know. AbroadinJapanPodcast at gmail.com. I'm always having hair in my food. I don't bloody care. Probably my hair, probably other people's hair. I'm a hairy guy.
Sounds like you do it deliberately, Pete. It's a bloody, oh God, this is getting horrible very quick. Same about hair and food. It really, really creeps me out. Makes me uncomfortable. Why is that?
Right, okay.
It's just dreadful. But yeah, poor guy. I must admit, though, reading that, I do want to go to Osaka and eat some takoyaki now. I love the old takoyaki fried octopus, kind of battered octopus stands. And you and I have been to one, right? Remember, we went to one in Osaka and we sat there and we had a lovely meal and you burnt your mouth out.
We tried, burnt my mouth, but you got to be careful. Let it cool before you start eating it.
We had two
different flavors, didn't we? We had the salt flavor and we had the takoyaki sauce, the okonomiyaki sauce. Beautiful.
We did.
Beautiful.
I remember vividly warning you, Pete, don't eat that. And you went, no, I'm going to eat it because I'm clever. And
that's fine,
put it in your
actually,
mouth.
I'll be fine.
Incinerated. Oh, no. They're deadly, they are. Word of warning, right? If there's one thing to take away from today's podcast, when eating takoyaki, like, prod it with the chopstick a little bit. Let the sort of heat come out because you will incinerate your mouth on it. It's like molten lava on the inside, those damn things.
It's like eating a hot bath pearl. Do you remember those from the 80s? Bath pearls. It's like leathery kind of little ball that would dissolve in the bath.
I do remember it. I do.
Disgusting.
Go and watch the Osaka video of Pete and I. That's a classic. I need to rewatch that. It's one of my favourite episodes from Journey Across Japan. You and I in Osaka. Banger. We'll be back with the fax machine after this quick break.
Bernie Katz was fun, he was kind. When he walked in, the room just lit up.
And there was something magical about this young man that just had a glint in his eye, that didn't give a shit about anything, but loved everything.
My first impressions were of a huge, vibrant and outgoing personality, all hugs, grins, extravagant language and wild attire.
Always in a leopard skin jacket, whirling around like a windmill. I know, she's a character. I don't know if those people exist anymore. They're sort of dying out. Everything's changed.
It is a bank holiday weekend in London, the late summer of 2017. The streets around Kentish Town, just north of the city and halfway towards Hampstead Heath, are unusually quiet. That evening, in a small, converted flat, just a 15-minute bus ride from King's Cross Station, Bernie Katz, pocket-sized and long-standing front-of-house manager of London's Groucho Club, is found dead by his landlord.
I said to him, what happened? You know, and he said, we are not talking about it. And yes, there have been the rumours. We've all heard. I mean, what did I hear specifically? That he was murdered.
His relationship with his father was so toxic. He hated the idea that his son was gay. His right. dad was a proper gangster. Bernie came down, there was a car far from. Guy blows his dad's head off.
They were all part of the same fetid, seething, self-referential nest of vipers that I think the Groucho had become.
Was Bernie depressive? I think yes. When alone, a condition he rarely sought, he had demons that flew about his head.
I get a call from Bernie and he is in £20,000 worth of debt with the Albanian gangsters in Soho. We all collected and paid the debt.
The way that the Albanians operate is very, very peculiar because they did not operate like any other mafia in Europe.
I've never been able to establish exactly what happened and why, but whatever it was so wrong.
Bernie, who killed the Prince of Soho? Listen now. A Stack production, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania. Too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And we're back with the fax machine. What have we got today in the fax machine, Mr. Donner?
I got
too excited there, because basically what happens is when I say, what's in the fax machine, you read out the first story and I go to take a swig of my Tully's coffee. In a can.
Yes.
But I got ahead of myself there. I went for the Tully's coffee before I'd finished the sentence and thus I messed up. And anyway, I'm going to drink the coffee.
Noticed a little hair in the coffee. Hi, Chris of Beat says, Judah from the UK. Hello, Judah. I am an all-time podcast listener, and watcher of a Brawn Japan YouTube channel. I discovered the channel through a friend who's also a big fan. Japan seems like such a cool country. Steady. And I hope to take the big step of moving there after university to teach English on the JET program. I'm currently learning Japanese, and I look forward to trying it out one day in Japan. My question is, I've noticed the crime seems to be quite low in Japan compared to other countries like the UK or USA. What are your thoughts on the reason for this? Keep the great work. Chris, you've been such an inspiration to me, and I would like to thank you big time. Judah from the UK, why is crime so low? Chris, do the police know where you are at all times? Is that why?
It's because there's not enough British nationals here to stuff bento boxes into post boxes. I don't know, really. I think it's the collectivist culture. If you commit a crime, you basically destroy your entire family and friends circle. It'll look really bad for all your family. So there's that kind of pressure, I think, that sort of pressure of destroying your family unit. Also, I don't know. I don't really know. I think the culture, like as a kid, it's heavily ingrained in you to sort of stick to the rules, like the way everyone's educated here. But honestly, I don't know. There's many reasons to it. Also, if you do commit a crime, the judicial system, the legal system here is formidable, and you will be in a really unpleasant situation where you'll probably be in a solitary confinement prison cell on your knees doing this horrible position where you have to sit on your knees for days and weeks at a time. But like, yeah, I think it really is the sort of pressure and people, and also, yeah, I don't know. I think it comes down to collectivist element of this culture. Any thoughts, Pete?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Obviously, I am not a resident of Japan. I don't really know why crime is so low, but certainly conviction rates are really high. If you get arrested, you're invariably going to get charged with the crime itself. And also, it's the honour thing, isn't it? It's the honour thing, isn't it? I suppose. And just people are just a bit more kind of apologetic and sorrowful, I think, and conscientious, I suppose.
Well, I think one other reason to add to that is people here are much more, people are better at containing their opinions, shall we say, in public. You only really express your opinion to people you already know, you're very good friends with, right? You won't go to a bar and kick off a political debate. You won't start having a heated conversation with people you don't know, right? So I don't think I've ever really seen a fight in Japan, a physical altercation in 9 years, or people getting angry at each other, because people just keep to themselves, right? It's just that part of the culture, that sort of indirectness where people are very polite. They don't want to have uncomfortable situations. They don't want to start arguments over trivial things with strangers they've never met. Whereas in the UK, you go down the pub, you have a few drinks, and then you get in a political debate, or you talk about how much you hate Star Wars, and someone punches you in the face. And, I don't know. It's easy as that. I don't know. I think that's a big part of it, though. The way people communicate here, and the way they're raised, and the collectivist aspect of the culture. All I know is it's nice. It's not, I mean, Japan isn't free of crime, though. It's lovely, but it's, you know, Japan isn't free of crime by any measure. There's a lot of things going on. We often talk about it on the podcast, but there's all sorts of things. And I guess the worst thing that people often bring up the most is the whole groping situation on the trains in rush hour in Tokyo. I do know a lot of people who have had unpleasant experiences from strangers who've had been stalked and whatnot. So there is that, but I don't know. Generally, I would go for a walk every night here for about an hour. That's why I look so brilliant and healthy and slim and fit and attractive. But I do go for a walk every night for an hour. And I wouldn't necessarily want to do that in the UK. I think I would think twice about it. But here, I don't care. I just feel like there's no risks. But in London, going for an hour's walk every night for a year, kind of inviting something terrible to happen. Wouldn't you agree, Pete?
Well, it depends on where you live, I suppose. If you live in deepest, darkest, central London,
your old stomping ground.
But I mean, you know, I think people who live in cities, they just know that they understand that, you know, things are a little bit more dangerous, and there's always someone screaming and shouting in the street because that's the city. If you live in New York, if you live in Los Angeles, people like to scream, they like to shout, and you can always spot a tourist who has never lived in a city, because when somebody just goes "Wah!" in the street, they go, "Oh my god, what's going on?" Well, in fact, it's just the city, baby. You just got to deal with it. So yeah, I think like you said, Japan, there's a lot of creepy creepers out there, a lot of sexual deviants out there, but there's not as many thieves around.
Although we did have last week the person that broke into a guy's house and lived in his cupboard for a year secretly. I'm trying to say that, oh, it's not that bad, but I guess that is quite bad. I think I'd actually be really traumatised and have severe PTSD if I discovered someone had been living in my bloody closet for the last year. We've got a story here from Lena. It says, "Hey, Chris and Pete, been binge listening to the podcast, enjoying it very much. My Japanese studies started almost 4 years ago after a very long deliberation. I was kind of embarrassed to sign up for lessons, but I'm also very, very bad at studying. So I ended up taking group classes and I'm still at it, plus some one-on-one tutoring on the side. I can't recommend iTalki enough. However, studying is just for fun as a hobby. I don't really have the drive to master things, which led me to my kanji studies drying up and eventually stopping completely. On that note, I'd like to ask Chris, how often do you find the need to write in Japanese? I've heard that Japan is still quite big on paperwork, so I assume you need to have frequent meetings with the lovely kanji. Any interesting stories there? Also, Pete, I found the interviews you did with Mark and Dan back in April quite fascinating. My interest in sports is near zero, so I thought about skipping that episode, but I'm really glad I didn't. It would be nice to do more interviews like that in the future and invite people with different backgrounds and professions who live and work in Japan. Still, I would never say no to more of Dogen. Looking forward to the newest journey across Japan, guys. Stay safe. Keep in good spirits. Lena." Yes, do more, Pete. Have Mark and Dan back.
They're very nice people. Dan's obviously very, very busy with the Olympics and stuff, which is very, very, very exciting. Obviously, the Japanese football team are doing their thing. Mm. The J League in full swing.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't need to write Japanese kanji characters at all, really. The amount of times I need to do it is pretty minimal. Like, once you've memorized your address, which is the main thing you have to write, for example, whenever you go to a hotel in Japan as a foreigner, you have to sort of write your address down and show them your gaijin zaiyu card. And so learn your kanji characters for your address if you can. Other than that, not really, because when I do write Japanese, it's usually on my phone. And when you write, just, for example, for the word, let me think of a quick word, like kuruma, car, right? If I'm writing the word car, which is kuruma, I'll type in kuruma, K-U-R-U-M-A, on the keyboard, and the kanji for kuruma will just come up, right? So I don't have to draw it on my screen or anything. So it's kind of, when you're using computer-mediated communication, it's very easy. And so I can generally read kanji as good as I used to, but I can't write them at all as well as I used to. And it's a shame because I do quite like writing kanji. It's quite fun, but I'm the sort of person who doesn't do things unless I really, really need to. And if I don't need to write them in everyday life, then I'm going to not do that because it takes a lot of like revision to keep those characters in your head to do it over and over. So, but it's fun though. Can you write any kanji characters, Pete?
I can do dog. I can draw a dog. It's a very complex kanji, compound kanji. Very, very, very difficult.
So the problem is, I'm at the point now where I could read the kanji for dog, right? I could read inu easily. But to think of it on the spot and write it, actually can't think of it. And that's really quite frustrating.
Isn't it just it looks like a man? It looks like a man throwing a stick for a dog. That's what it looks like.
But like, if I was to spend like a few weeks revising them and going back over it, it would kind of come back to me, I think.
Come back,
God, it's the easy one. Now I'm ashamed. It's the kanji for fat. It's the kanji for like big,
yes,
actually, with a little dash on the top right. Yeah, cool kanji, that. Dog, isn't it?
It's good. Very, very descriptive. I mean, Ella has got it. Can't speak. Ella, I've not had a coffee. Hey, Chris and Pete, my boyfriend and I are intending to travel to Japan a lot in our lifetimes and have been once already, although we only stayed in Tokyo for the first round. Over the course of researching best practices and whatnot, I remembered that during past trips to other countries, I had to receive vaccinations before going. So I did some digging and found out about a disease called Japanese encephalitis. It seems to be almost but not quite eradicated, but you're more likely to get it in heavily wooded areas as a disease because you get that you get from mosquito bites. Since my boyfriend and I intend to travel to every corner of Japan, we're likely to get a bite now and then. We would rather have the peace of mind, as Japanese encephalitis sounds nightmarish and is very deadly. But our doctors over here didn't seem to think it was a great big deal for us to get the vaccine. Now, I'm well aware that you both aren't doctors. Oh, Ella, come on now, mate. We'll all have a crack, unless you're hiding something from us all. So I'm not asking for medical advice on whether we should get the vaccine or not, but I do want to know, have either of you got this vaccine? Was it recommended to you by any doctors before heading over, Chris or Pete, for travelling? Have you ever heard of anyone who's got this horrible disease, or are the Japanese concerned about it at all? With the vaccines, the concerns about vaccines among Japanese people, are any of them even vaccinated for JE? Well, I'll probably get this vaccine anyway for peace of mind, but I haven't heard literally anyone talking about this, and I follow many a JTuber on various mediums. Please answer my question. I really hope you answered my question anyway. Always a pleasure listening to you guys, and I hope to be able to meet you one day. Thanks for everything. Love, heart. Ella, thank you for your message. And yeah, I mean, like that, I have had a few vaccines in my time, going to different parts of Africa and Malaysia and places like that. But, you know, when I went to Japan, I ain't getting none of that. And I've been to some pretty rural areas.
Yeah, I mean, I think I got it because you kind of, your advice to get it on the JET program before you come, but right. I don't really remember. Maybe I did. I think I got encephalitis and typhoid or something, but I met a good friend of mine about a year or two, was coming over, and he was really worried about it, and I was like, you know, you don't necessarily need it for 2 weeks. The thing is, there's only 68,000 cases a year across all of kind of Southeast Asia, and you know, you've got like a population of like 3 billion people and 68,000 cases. Out of that, I think there's about 17,000 deaths a year. Actually, that sounds like quite a lot in some respects, but
not all in Japan, though, presumably.
But I think most cases are kind of asymptomatic. You don't really get that many symptoms. The most common symptoms are headache, vomiting, fever, and then it can cause brain swelling. But I don't know. I think if you're coming here to live long term, it might be worth getting it. Might be worth getting it. And I should really go and check out and see if I've got it, because I'm curious, to be honest. But I think it's quite a safe vaccine to get as well. But yeah, get it to live, but necessarily don't worry about it as a tourist. But if any of you guys have an experience of actually contracting encephalitis on your trip to Japan, we'd be very keen to hear about it, actually. Drop us a line there at bornjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We've got one last one from Marco. It says, hey, Pete and Chris, my name is Marco, and I'm messaging from Orlando, Florida, the blandest city in America. Oh, it's not that bad, is it? It's got Disneyland and Epcot. I've been to Florida. It's one of the few places I've been in America, along with Seattle and Washington. And I vividly remember, as a nine-year-old kid, going to Florida, going to Orlando, we went to a restaurant called the House of Pancakes. And on the table next to us, some people didn't pay the tip to the waitress because their food was like 2 minutes late. And I remember they walked off without paying the tip, and she cried loads. And my family felt really guilty, and we gave her like $5, and that cheered her up a bit. And that's my enduring memory of
the
Orlando.
Solution.
Yeah, there you go. Pancakes. I've been watching House of Pancakes. Have you ever heard of this place? Is it real? Is it still there, Pete?
Yeah, House of Pancakes is pretty popular, isn't it? They've got quite. What's the other big pancake? What's the other big pancake brand?
Pancake House
in America. I remember I went to a pancake. Oh God, what was it called? And I picked the wrong one, and I got served what could only be described as a big fucking gatto. It's just a big stack of chocolate flavored pancakes, and it was just like gatto. It was horrible.
Oh, good. Ugh. God. Well, I can't remember the House of Pancakes, but I certainly intend to go there when I return to Florida one day. Marco continues, I've been watching your videos since before moving to Japan in 2017 to work as an ALT in Nagano City, and I discovered the podcast in the past year. I've since moved back to the US, and I'm currently working on finishing my PhD in hospitality and tourism. My hope is soon to find a job in Japan and to eat lots of Kulish and drink cow piss. I'm disappointed by the lack of pancakes, Marco. My background aside, I have an interesting question for you all. One of my professors is from Japan. We were talking about different destinations in the country. Our discussion turned to a place in Nagano called Obasute. Orbaste essentially translates to, oh God, Orbaste, it essentially translates to throw out the grandma. I guess back in olden times, people used to abandon their grandmothers here. People have written articles about it. So I wanted to ask, do you guys know of any other place in Japan that have names with dark origins? Thank you for the great podcast. All the best, guys. Best wishes, Marco. I only misread that as, do you know of any place in Japan that have a name with dark oranges? And I would have had no answer. But I do feel like
there must be some kind of prefectures that have particularly dark oranges. Oranges.
Satsuma domain. Obaste. Obasa means like grandma. Steru is the kanji, is the verb to throw out. Only thing is, right, I need to look at the kanji characters for this town to verify it is actually that and not something else. For example, last year on Journey Across Japan, we went to Gedo, the hot spring town, right? Beautiful hot spring town, 1,000-year-old log.
Yeah.
But Gedo, it means to be sick, to be violently sick in Japanese.
Oh, wow.
Gedo. however, it was a different kanji. So it's said the same way, but different kanji character. So it kind of
was
different. What do you make of it, Pete?
I'm trying to think. I don't know. I'm always obsessed with the KFC Colonel gets thrown into the Dotonbori River, and that killed a man when he looked for the KFC Colonel after the baseball fans threw him in. And the monks that we saw in Sakata, the monks that buried themselves and just stopped eating and just kind of basically mummified themselves deep underground. That's pretty dark. That's pretty creepy, to be quite frank. Speaking of kanji, the Japanese language, I learnt a new word from Natsuki on Journey Across Japan, episode 1. Bureru. Sort of wobbly, shaky. Yeah, bureru.
Ureru?
Bureru. Oh,
bureru. Ureru, isn't it?
Ureru. I thought it was bureru.
Ureru. Nah, he said ureru. That means to wobble, to shake. Ureru.
Right.
Don't learn Japanese from Natsuki. That's always a slippery slope.
I've got him an iTalki.
when he came to the UK, he taught my friend like one word, and that word was kusotare, which means shit, basically. He's like, my friend was like, oh, teach me some Japanese. Could have taught him some nice words, but no, kusotare just means shit, basically. While we were discussing ureru, I discovered this town. I typed in Obaste, and I came up with Ubaste on Wikipedia. Ubaste means abandoning an old woman on a mountain. What is this article, right? Ubaste means abandoning an old woman. It's a mythical practice of senicide in Japan, whereby an infirm or elderly relative was carried to a mountain or remote desolate place and left there to die. What the dickens is this? How have I stumbled across this? Apparently, it's the subject of legends, but it does not seem to have been a common custom. It's more to do with folklore. Thank God for that. That'd be a pretty grim ending.
It's a way of keeping old people in line, I would say. Watch yourself, granny.
Back on the mountain. I mean, it reminds me of Sparta and how the Spartans would take their weak babies, the babies that are rubbish, and just leave them on a mountain to be like eaten by wolves.
Aww.
It seems more sinister, though, leaving your grandparents up on a mountain, doesn't it? Don't know. I will dig deeper.
How do you
though,
test the strength of a baby?
I don't know. That's a very good question. A topic to be solved in next week's episode. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in the next few days to do it all over again, guys. But for now, keep an eye out for Journey Across Japan, episode 2, season 3. I can't keep track of it myself. And we'll be back to do it all over again in the next few days. But for now, have yourselves a good one. Bye-bye.
Do you even lift, baby?
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.